welcome to Global Solidarity with myself, Tony Fitzsimons. Now, during the week, Burma Action Ireland organised a public talk on the situation in Burma of the Rohingya people. The Rohingya in Burma are one of the most marginalised and vulnerable communities in the world. Although they've lived in Burma for generations, the Burmese government and many in Burmese society claim the Rohingya are illegal Bengali immigrants. The Rohingya were recognised as one of the ethnic peoples of Burma until the 1982 citizenship law stripped them of their citizenship and rendered them stateless. Since then, they have faced severe persecution, which exploded last year, resulting in the death of at least 1,000 people and a displacement of over 130,000. Human Rights Watch published a report on the crisis in April last, entitled "All You Can Do Is Pray: Crimes Against Humanity and Ethnic Cleansing of Rohingya Muslims in Burma's Arakan State." The report documents evidence of mass graves and describes the role of the security forces in coordinated attacks on Muslim neighbourhoods, the forcible displacement of the population and the denial of access to humanitarian aid. Human Rights Watch Deputy Asia Director Phil Robertson states, "The Burmese government engaged in a campaign of ethnic cleansing against the Rohingya that continues today through the denial of aid and restrictions on the movement. The government needs to put an immediate stop to the abuses and to hold the perpetrators accountable, or it will be responsible for further violence against ethnic and religious minorities in the country." The two speakers, well, first up was Haikal Mansour, who left Burma when he was 18. He's a member of the Rohingya community in Ireland and is currently studying medicine at the National University of Ireland in Galway. And the other speaker was Kyril Amin, born in Burma and has been living in Norway since 2005. He's the founding member and incumbent chair of the European Rohingya Council. And he was introduced by Anthony Hannan of Burma Action Ireland.
My name is Anthony Hannan, as I think I've met all of you already, but I'm the treasurer of Burma Action Ireland, so it's my pleasure to welcome you all here today. Today we're going to, we have the privilege to have two representatives, if you like, of the Rohingya community come to talk to us here today about the situation with the Rohingyas in Burma, and I'll be introducing them in a minute. I suppose, but firstly, I just want to give a very brief introduction just about Burma at the moment. Because in the last 2 years, there's been no doubt that there have been changes in Burma, and there is an opportunity for further changes which must be encouraged. However, the international community has tended to highlight the positive while ignoring some important and harsh realities on the ground. Burma's democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi is now a member of parliament, and hundreds of political prisoners have been released. Ceasefires have been agreed with most of the country's ethnic armed groups. Space for media, civil society, and political actors has increased significantly. Sanctions have been lifted, trade and investment delegations are pouring in, and in 2015, Burma will have elections. However, all these changes are to be welcomed, but they do not yet amount to a change of system. Several hundred political prisoners remain in jail, repressive laws remain in place, the constitution disqualifies Suu Kyi from the presidency and guarantees the military a quarter of parliamentary seats. Ceasefire with ethnic and resistance groups are welcome, but in substance they amount to little more than a pause in conflict. They are accompanied by new concerns over land confiscation in the name of development as business come into ceasefire areas and take over the land. And today we're going to be concentrating in particular on the ethnic groups. 40% of the population in Burma is made up of different ethnic groups. And the Rohingyas at the moment, as we will hear shortly, are one of the ethnic groups that are probably one of the most vulnerable and most oppressed communities, in not just in Burma, but in the world. And although they have lived in Burma for generations, the Burmese government and many in Burmese society claim the Rohingyas are illegal Bengali immigrants. The Rohingya were recognised as one of the ethnic peoples of Burma until 1982 citizenship law stripped them of their citizenship and rendered them stateless. And since then, they have faced severe persecution, which exploded last year, resulting in the deaths of at least 1,000 people and a displacement of over 130,000. And today, it is our privilege to have two speakers come to talk about the situation. The first speaker, Haykal Mansour. He's been living in Ireland. He's a member of the Rohingya community in Ireland and is currently pursuing medicine at the National University of Ireland in Galway. He left Burma when he was 18 for the purposes of fulfilling his goal, becoming a doctor, when he was barred going to Magway Medical University in Burma in 2004, although he qualified and passed as one of the best students in the state, which is Arakan. So he'll be talking about the historical background. And then after that, to talk about the current situation with the Rohingya community, we have Karul Amin. Karul was born in Burma in 1971. And he is the founding member and current president of the Rohingya community in Norway. And he's also the founding member and incumbent chairman of the European Rohingya Council. So Karul will be talking about the current problems faced by the Rohingya both in Arakan and around the world. So we thank Karul very much in particular for coming all the way. He just arrived yesterday from Norway and he's flying out tomorrow. So he's come here to specifically for this event. So it's our great privilege to have Karul here. Just a little, just to say afterwards, there'll be an opportunity after the speakers. Speakers will talk maybe for 10 to 15 minutes and then we'll have questions. And then we have a short video. Maybe 10. It's about 11 minutes long, which we'll show after the questions, and then we'll wrap up after that. So, without further ado, then I invite Haykal Mansour to talk. Thank you.
Good evening. First of all, I wanted to say thank you for coming, and it is such an honor to be in front of your presence in a wonderful country and wonderful day today. I'm ever grateful for showing me the confidence and the trust as a human being, although I was and I am considered as a subhuman somewhere in Burma. I could have got many shoes thrown at me as a gift from audience if I were in Burma the way I'm standing now. I'm a Rohingya, partly human and partly subhuman. And please wake me up if I fell asleep, because part of me always want to sleep. Since everyone's suffering is everyone's suffering, I would prefer using our people instead of my people. I don't want to make you part of subhuman, but I want you to feel with your human heart you have and know how the human can be transformed by a fellow human beings. When it comes to Rohingya, many Burmese said we are illegal immigrant or virus or Bengali. And many even say we don't speak Burmese, we don't act like Burmese, or we don't look like Burmese. And some even describe us as ugly as ogres. You may know about this gentleman. His name is General Yimi Ong. He's a Burmese consulate in Hong Kong. And whatever they may call us, my human part is still very proud of having a Burmese heart and having profound Burmese ancestry way back to many centuries, although there is debate on exact date. We are not simply pop up from the soil. We are rather a mixture of intermarriages between the native of Arakan as well as the settler, the people of Arab or Indian subcontinent. Because we used to be part of Arakan, and Aragonese kings such as Sulayman Shah from 1430 to Salim Shah 1627 had Muslim names in honor and respect to the follower of Islam. The previous junta government and the current so-called civilian government often said there's no historical evidence that Rohingya existed in Burma before 1827 or 24. But I would like to invite them to my library to show their shameless faces. A journal published in 1799 called Comparative Vocabulary of Some of the Languages Spoken in Burma Empire clearly mentioned that native of Arakan call themselves as Rohingya, who are Muslim. There are other journals as well published in 1811 and 1815. And one of the most obvious one is the Thermidor Journal, also known as Military Journal, published in 1961, which describes the majority of people living in Northern Arakan are Rohingya, and they are one of the ethnic groups of Burma. When these evidence were shown to our greatest contemporary historian, Dr. A. Chen, who himself is a kind former state, he simply said Rohingya term was used to describe Rakhine instead of Rohingya with us. I would like to ask him a question. His people underwent coma for more than 50 years, who forget their names and everything's identity. We were human like everyone else in Burma. We lived peacefully, we fought bravely for our independence, and we represented our countries proudly. We had 33 member of parliaments throughout the history. Our lady, Dr. A. Nyi, in 1951 was one of the two first women parliamentarian in Burmese history. And another, our gentleman, Mr. Sultan Amos, in 1961, was the Minister of Education and Health. Even my grandfather was educated at Oxford University during 1960 by the first Burmese democratic government led by UNU. Sadly, things have changed dramatically. And we had our language program broadcasted by on Burmese Broadcasting Service in 1961. And the first and the second Prime Minister, UNU and Ubashe, declare us a Burmese ethnic group and have equal rights. But when Dictator Nguyen took power in 1963, we are slowly transformed to a far below level that we are considered as subhuman over five decades. As soon as he came to power, he canceled our language program and he changed our state name from Arakan to Rakhine state. Rakhine is our ethnic sister group in my state. And he ordered many operations against us. For example, Nagazin operation in 1967, Nagami operation in 1978, which has forced more than 300,000 Rohingya to shelter in Bangladesh and killing thousands of us, as well as and making Southern Arakan Rohingya free zone. He also ordered to destroy and erase all the historical monuments such as Sandikan Mosque and Musa Mosque built during Arakanese kingdom. I remember once William Shakespeare said, Lawless are they that make their will their law. It is true. Dictator Nguyen finally fulfilled his will by implementing a citizenship law in 1982, which has taken away all the rights that we have as a native and a citizen of Burma. It violates all the human rights you can think of. I would like to mention some of them. One of the greatest violations of freedom is human rights is the freedom of movement. We need to apply to travel from across the town. We have to spend days to get the permission, and we have to pay a bribe, although our well-behaved government have motto everywhere. One example is Lapele Udurentu, which means enemy are those they give bribe and those take bribes. Thanks goodness the officials are following very nicely. The restriction of movement has tremendous effect on everyday life. Imagine spending of my 18 years within one city or within one town, which is as big as Kilkenny. It directly affects doing business outside Arcon and need to buy goods from our kind people with 3 or 4 times higher than actual price. On top of high cost, there is mounting of taxation for everything we have and everything we own. Some many parts of Arcon we have to pay tax for even the tree we have in the backyard. Many people end up losing their properties due to unpaid tax. Many of the time, our properties are simply taken away without notice. The second biggest violation is religious freedom. We have witnessed many mosques being closed, demolished, transformed, and even touched down. Can you imagine that currently all the mosques in Arcon being closed for more than a year since the conflict happened last June? Violation of religious freedom also include making Rohingya men to be clean-shaved and forbidding to have wedding according to our religious and Rohingya traditions. You may hear two-child policy. Yeah, you may hear two-child policy recently, but it existed since 2008. But it was unofficial, but it was applied to all the Rohingya people in Malaysia. And they said this to control overpopulation or overreproduction of Rohingya people. I'm still very proud of still being fertile, even though the circumstances are unfertile. At the same time of the population, there are hundreds or perhaps thousands of Bengali Rakhine are infiltrating into Arcon from Chittagong hill tracts of Bangladesh. And the local authority and the government is relocating them into model villages built on confiscated Rohingya land. Even my two neighboring villages are occupied by these Bengali Rakhine people. Burmese people and politicians often say there is continuous influx of Bengali illegal immigrants, referring Rohingya people. With a logical mind, we will wonder that why there is a dramatic rising of Rakhine population from 3% to up to 30% in northern Arcon, where 93% of the people are Rohingya people. And one would wonder why Bengali people want to go to the place known as, which is as bad as hell on earth. And they said, we can't speak Burmese. How can a group of people encaged in a cell for more than five decades, who are majority people and speak Rohingya language, can be able to speak another language? These are things that make us think. And I can surely tell you that majority of Rakhine people even don't know how to speak Burmese, even though they have similar dialect. The third violation is the right to study. In town where Rohingya predominate, school from primary to high school have the lowest level in terms of infrastructure, quality and quantity of teachers. We have the lowest percentage of passing rate in exam in the country. And our school teachers are mostly Rakhine, and Rohingya teachers are rarely found in any school because we are not entitled to hold public post. Once we graduate from high school, we are prohibited to study medicine, dentistry, engineering, computer science, history, geography, and many, many others. Even though I was graduated from high school in 2004 with second highest in my state, I was about to go to study my goal of becoming a doctor. The inspiration for such a tough career studying medicine for me came in many ways. Majority of us are not entitled to benefit the hospital care. I have a big experience in a hospital. Once a Rohingya man was seriously injured and he was hospitalized, and the nurse left him, "Why you came here?" We have only 4 Rohingya doctors for the population of 250,000 Rohingya people in my hometown alone. And among 4 doctors, one was sent to jail recently, and the rest are approaching 70s. As a medical student, I always worry about the lack of medical care and attention in my state, and as well as the consequences of the medical problem. And for any major medical problem, many of us have to seek treatment in neighboring country, Bangladesh, illegally, which is very risky. And there are a lot of violations of human rights that I can't list here. But I would like to mention a very serious ongoing one, which is forcing Rohingya people to register as Bengali. Those who refuse to do so are either killed or arrested. 2 months ago, a 14-year-old boy was shot dead in IDP camp for refusing as Bengali and shouting as Rohingya. My resistance to defend my identity lasted until the very end of my life in Burma. This is another reason why I failed to see the second town in Arkan, because I need a white card registered at Bengali. The inhumane treatment don't end here. There was a Pei Thaya operation, also known as Operation Clean Nation, led by previous government in 1992, which made my father exile along with nearly 300,000 Rohingya people in Chittagong region of Bangladesh. Many of us are still living under the dire conditions in 4 refugee camps, 2 are registered and 2 are unregistered, with very similar vicious treatment experience in Arkan. It is completely noteworthy that there are few countries that has, like the Irish government, has shown their kindness, love, and caring by bringing and transforming all the 78 Rohingya people from Bangladesh refugee camps under the refugee resettlement program. We are ever grateful for giving the chance to experience what the real freedom is, how it looks like, and how to value it. Majority of Rohingya are resettled in Kalo, as mentioned, with 2 families in Dublin. Without continuous support of Irish government, local people, and organizations such as St. Catherine Community Service in Kalo, Burma Action Island, and many others, we will never be able to reincarnate back to human. Now, our youth are participating in various competitions like hauling, football, cricket, with professional training from so many kind-hearted volunteers and well-wishers. Please help us to fulfill the dream of our father, General Aung San, to have a unified and free Burma for all the races and religions with the blessing you have. And please help us bring together in harmony and peace that the real Buddhism teaches. We have forgiven them whatever they did. And please forgive me for taking so long here as well. And please help us. It won't be possible without you, since many of us still being subhuman. Gorif Ma Akaif. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Heikel.
Without any further ado, maybe I'll ask Carol Amin to talk. As I said, he is the founding member and the incumbent chairperson of the European Rohingya Council, and he's come all the ways from Norway to speak to us here today. So we're really very grateful for him for coming. And then afterwards, we'll have an opportunity for questions and answers.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I especially want to thank the coordinator of the Bauma Action Island, also distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. It is my honor to come here all the way from Norway to talk about something about the current situations of the Bauma and the current situation of the Rohingya, both in Arakan and neighboring countries also. Before I go to my topic, I just want to take a little bit of the history. Arakan was once a kingdom. We had more than 16 kings, but it was invaded by the Burmese governments on the invitations of the Rakhines. However, we lived together. This is two communities side by side peacefully until 1942. In 1942, there was an uprising, so a sectarian violence where many thousand Rohingyas were killed. After the democratic governments, we had also, as my brother said, all our rights, including our radio channels, our TV channels, a member of the parliaments, ministers. But suddenly, after the military coup in 1963, we have lost everything, including our citizenship. The situation of the Rohingya becomes more dire after 1982 citizenship law, where Rohingya were declared illegal immigrants. Yeah, it was the history. If I say the situation in Arakan today, I can describe it as dire as before. After, for example, the 3rd of June last year, so there nothing has been changed. Actually, the situation is getting more worse as the time goes. As a result, it was a few years back, UN has described Rohingya as one of the most oppressed people of the world, community of the world. If I take into consideration of the current situation, also ongoing carnage on our people, I can say Rohingya can be the most oppressed people of the world today. This was the violence against Rohingya was actually pre-planned. It was planned for many years back with the help of former military intelligence general, military intelligence director General Kim Yu. He was the mastermind who has made the Rohingya a living hell, who has made the Arakans for the Rohingya a living hell. When he was in jail, so it was a little bit quiet. When he was released in the jail, he started with his colleague, the Viratu, a monk, who is instigating sectarian violence against Rohingya. Then he started all these things. It was clearly, concretely planned. And our people in the Naypyidaw, in Yangon, our politicians has submitted such a report to the Burmese government many times with the concrete evidences that there is a certain group, including Rakhine politicians and Kim Yu, also monk Viratu, is going to make such kind of case against Rohingya. But the government in the Naypyidaw didn't take any actions, which proves that the government in the southern part of the government in the Naypyidaw, especially the president Thein Sein, has the backing for these people who are instigating. It's proved recently when the Time magazine published an article, also picture was on the front page, Mong Viratu's picture was on the front page saying, the face of the Buddhist era. Thein Sein government did not hesitate. He came immediately and lashed out on the Time magazines. He said Viratu was a noble person or a member of the noble person. He has to do this in order to save their religions. in this world today, who can allow to kill people of other religion just to save own religions? So it proves that Tan Sing government is fully supportive of these carnages. Also, that's why his security forces are not taking any actions against those who are perpetrating. Also, if I say the situations of the people in Arkan, especially the IDPs, it is a kind of a living hell, because neither the national or international community is allowed to move freely or to help them freely. At the same time, they are not allowing people to go or to move themselves from place to place to take to earn their livelihood, which means the whole IDPs can become like concentration camps. People are dying there. Many international organizations have reported they saw people dying in front of their very eyes, but they could not have the opportunity to save because of the hindrance they are getting from the Burmese sides. Violence against our people are still going on with the same speed, although there were no open burning until recently, because these perpetrators are more organized now. More organized, they are more galvanized and more energized. So they are planning very efficiently and effectively. Tan Sing and Mong Wiratu, the founder of the 969 criminal movement, and their accomplices have marched together with the ALP, which is an armed group of RNDP, we can say. They have been collecting ammunition, weapons without any problems. Also, they are using this ammunition and weapons on our people. We have plenty of evidences where our people has apprehended some of the members of ALP, along with their weapons, also handed them over to the Burmese security forces. No action was taken against them, but they were released after some times. Because we have the clear evidences, also our people have talked to the security forces somewhere. Those who doesn't like, who did not like, for example, this kind of carnages, they say they have been ordered by the higher authority to do so, not to harm any of the perpetrators. So as a simple human being, we can see whether government is involved or government is not a part of these problems. Recently, Tan Sing has called UN and international community to resettle the whole of the Rohingya community in other countries, third world countries, or to evict them from their houses, place them in the refugee camps, which can be run, which would be run by UN. But the UN has promptly rejected his request, and that's why he is taking this way, which is to make the whole of Arakan like a hell for Rohingya. Those who are in the hell will be burned or they will kill, otherwise they have to leave the place. So that has been happening now, actually. I myself have contacted some of our people in Arakan, because they are living the Arakan state, taking very dangerous voyage to other countries. Maybe you have seen the report of people drawn in the river while they on their way to Thailand or Malaysia. So we try to persuade our people not to leave Arakan, because if they are leaving Arakan, they are fulfilling the wish of Rakhine extremists and the Burmese governments. So they say, if you are saying that, can you please save us, or you people can send some lethal injection or consumable poison so that we can die ourselves instead of being killed in front of the eyes of our very eyes of our children, or being burned at alive. If we can die peacefully, so we don't need to leave our accounts. They are saying so. because they do not have any other way to save themselves or any other place to hide themselves. Oppositions, if I talk about the opposition is not playing any role or they are not fulfilling their moral obligations, especially when it comes to Rohingya. Opposition remain quite silent because they don't want to destroy their dreams of forming the governments, maybe after 2015 elections. They know that if they talk against these carnages or against these perpetrators, it will alienate the majority of Buddhist voters. That's why opposition doesn't want to sacrifice their gold for us, but they can sacrifice a Rohingya for their own gold. However, I don't want to blame oppositions, although they are not doing anything, because whether they do anything for us or they don't do, it will not give any effect. It will not change the situation on the ground. Because, as you know, the behavior of the Tensings or behavior of the military governments in Myanmar, they do not hear actually anyone. They do whatever they like. But Tensing, today he is a civilian, a civil person. He is saying president of the Burma, but he was a general. A general, so we can say he is a old wine in the new bottle. So there is not much difference. Also, especially another thing with Tensing is he has the Rakhine blood. His grandfather was a Rakhine. That's why he has to do that, to as he said, to save his religions or his people, because they have the Islamic phobia. Not only Tensing, most of the Buddhists in Myanmar has Islamic phobia. It has been further increased, Islamic phobia has been further increased because of the sermons, because of the instigative speech given by Buddhist monk Virato. Similarly, the developed nations, the powerful nations, are not doing enough in order to save this Rohingya, because they have also their own goals and their own interests, especially the economic interests in this time of economic crisis. They don't want to sacrifice their economic interests because of Rohingya, the economic interest for Rohingya. I've talked to many politicians in Norway. Whenever we talk to them, they just say, we know the problems, we know how dire is the situation, and we are very much concerned about your people. We are taking this issue with Nipido, with Tansu. They fulfill their promise. Whenever they reach, for example, to Nipido, they say, we are concerned about these people, you have to stop. Tensing also say, I know that. I know the problems. I'm trying to solve the problem, but I need resources to solve these problems. I need to do some development project in Myanmar, in Arakans, or I need to help these Rohingya people to learn. For example, they were Rohingya were uneducated, and therefore this problem is happening. In that way, Tensing is collecting millions of dollars in the name of helping Rohingyas there. Instead of going this money to Rohingya, it directly goes to the perpetrators. If the money has actually come to the Rohingya, every Rohingya family living in the IDP's camp has got their own houses today. Money has been going to the perpetrators. This is indirectly encouraging them to commit more crimes against Rohingya, because they know that the more we kill, the more we burn the properties of Rohingya, the more we get. So money, giving money to Tensing government is actually giving the negative effect for the Rohingya. I said these carnages, this violence was pre-planned for a long time ago. But somebody may ask why they have waited for this time. Why didn't they started violence while military government was in place? They have chosen this time because they have the very wise advisors. They have the very strong advisors who advise them. This is the good opportunity for them. After, especially after the by-elections where Aung San Suu Kyi has won many places, Thein Sein has got praises from all over the world. So world is interested in Thein Sein and his government. Even Aung San Suu Kyi said Thein Sein was sincere at this time. It was only recently when he was in United States, Aung San Suu Kyi said Thein Sein words doesn't mesh with actions. Now she realized Thein Sein is not sincere enough. But the government of the developed countries, especially European and America, still thinks that Thein Sein is sincere. The perpetrators has therefore shows this time because world interest is in the Thein Sein and the Burmese economy and their investments, so they can finish this time's Rohingyas. As our brother said, Rohingyas are living from our camp because they do not have any other way to survive or to live in this country while the Rakhine settlers are coming. Rakhine settlers have been invited. Also Rakhines from other parts of the world, not good Rakhines, criminals, for example, from the jail, also drug addicts. Rakhines has been invited to the Arakans with the agreements of taking care after them for 3 years on the cause of Rohingya. Rohingya has to build houses for every Rakhine family being resettled, also provide them animals, farmlands. In the farmlands, that belong to Rohingya, also Rohingya must cultivate product goes to the Rakhines. This trend is going on. At the same time, the very serious what is happening in Arakan is, as my brother says, we do not have enough doctors, especially in Mongdo and Budidong. So our Muslim brothers has to seek the treatments from Rakhine doctors. So we have recently got the reports. There are many HIV Sikhs, Rohingya people. So people are doubtful. We have that doubt for a long time ago. They are deliberately transmitting HIVs to our people, which means they are trying to finish these people from every aspect. So if these trends continue around, say, 30 years, and nobody come to help or to save us, these people will become history in that part of the world. Until today, more than 9,000 Rohingyas have been killed. Some has died on their way to other countries. Some were drawn. More than 100 mosques and religious schools have been demolished and destroyed. And the remaining religious places and mosques were sealed. We do not have any mosque now where we can go in and pray. Okay. Also, the school, government schools are not for Rohingya, for example. There are some schools who doesn't forbid the Rohingya to go to the school, but they were harassed inside the school, they were insulted inside the school, so they have to choose not to go to the school. So, you can see, in every aspect of our life, it's as restricted as You cannot compare to any other communities in the world today. We therefore call upon the European community and member of the political parties, a member of the governments, to take firm actions in order to stop these people from becoming a history. I know it requires some sacrifices, especially the economic sacrifice, but I am sure that European community, European governments will always take the side of weaker and help and save the victims. With that, I'd like to end my speech. If anyone have any questions, can ask, and we'll try to answer. Also, I'd like to invite my brother, Haikal, to come here. Unfortunately, no. We do not get any support. Maybe there are some a few people from other communities just give us a verbal support. There are few parliamentarians who supports our parliamentarians when they were in the parliament. Other than that, we do not have any effective support because they were preoccupied with their own problem also. In Burma, every community has their own problem.
Are you disappointed in Aung San Suu Kyi's efforts to speak up for minorities?
Aung San Suu Kyi's effort to speak out for...
On behalf of the Rohingya and other minorities.
Until today, she is not openly speaking out on behalf of Rohingya minority. But recently, maybe she realized agenda of the TNC. Actually, the wisdom behind these carnages against the Rohingya is one of them is to defame Aung San Suu Kyi. Aung San Suu Kyi is the loser in either way. If she talk for us, she will lose the votes, for example, in general election. If she doesn't talk for us, she will lose the respect she has earned around the world, for example. There are many politicians surprised why Aung San Suu Kyi is not talking anything. That's why she is keeping, so she chose to keep quiet. But recently, with regard to the two-child policy, she speak out, she said this is the clear violations of human rights. Also, her spokesperson said they are going to change the 1982 citizenship law when they come to power. Even though Rakhine is against it, they said they don't care whether Rakhine against or supports this law must be changed.
And I would like to add one. You know, the doctor, personal doctor of Aung San Suu Kyi, who is always traveling along her, she's a doctor of one of the most powerful Rakhine politicians. She's also a Rakhine from my state. So these Rakhine people are very powerful and they are everywhere in every position, like opposition group and the government group as well. So it is very hard to go against them.
Irish people to pressure their governments, or at least to recommend their government to do something for our people. Because Ireland is a full democratic country. Government cannot go against the will of the people. If the Irish people wish their government to do something for us, I think government has to follow. Yeah, also another thing with regard to the video, I want to say we do not have any access to the video because our people are running for life. They do not have any chances to collect video while they were being killed, for example. This video mostly come from some parts of the security forces. There are some security forces who do not like this, for example, to kill people, to bomb people. They have collected some parts of some videos, also we have to buy these videos from them. Also, government is not allowing international media, international journalists. That's why the real picture is not coming out. What we are hearing from journalists or TV, it is only 1% of the problems we are having. If the whole picture come out, people will get mad.
There was a UN report earlier this year about the camps. Has there been any improvement?
No improvement at all. Also, UN has released 84 pages required in the name of just. We can pray. What is it? Just pray. Yeah. The same day, the European Parliament has lifted the sanctions. So, Human Rights Watch has released this report. But it didn't give any effect on the decisions of the European community. The same day they have released the issue, because they know that the European government is maybe going to lift the sanctions, whether this release can change their mind. No, it didn't happen. Unfortunately, the sanctions has been lifted.
But it was only 4% of the population Muslim. I wonder why the Buddhists feel so threatened by this.
It is not actually 4%. It is a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
In official term, maybe they are saying 4%. It is around 10%. Mm-hmm. They are afraid because, especially for us, our problem started. Their problem started from us, from Rohingya. They know that Rohingya are very hardworking and very clever people. Since the democratic government has already come, they know that if we get the same rights, equal rights with them, we will always get upper hand in every aspect of the life, economy, politics, everything. So that's why the Rakhans are afraid of that. Thin Singh himself has acknowledged, he said, some Rakhine elements want to get upper hand in the business. That's why they are doing that. That's why, before the real democracy comes, they want to finish these people. They are afraid. Our people who are living in Rangoon has a certain opportunity or certain rights. That's why our people, most of them are businessmen. And in their office, those people who are working are Buddhists. That's why they know that if these people get a chance, a good chance, we have to just work for them. So we can become slave for them or worker for them. And there is a kind of phobia.
Is there any intermarriage then between Buddhists and Muslims?
Hmm?
Is there any marriage?
It is very seldom. Especially that is true. So I have to confess, our people doesn't want to marry anyone from Buddhist examples, because our religions also doesn't allow. We can marry with Christian, Jews, not Buddhist or Hindu or anything. So, and once again, thank you so much.
And if you want more information on the situation in Burma, you can go to BurmaActionIreland.org, all one word, BurmaActionIreland.org. And finally this week, a belated news release from Amnesty. Members of Amnesty International Ireland joined over 30,000 other Irish people on the streets of the capital yesterday for the annual Dublin Pride Parade. Homosexuality is still illegal in 38 African countries, and in some parts of the continent, those found guilty can face the death penalty. Earlier this week, Amnesty International published a comprehensive report exposing rising levels of homophobia in sub-Saharan Africa. Colm O'Gorman, Executive Director of Amnesty International Ireland, said, "We're delighted to be at Pride again this year and showing our support for Ireland's proud LGBTI community. but we also want to show our solidarity with LGBTI activists across Africa who face threats, harassment, beatings and imprisonment simply for who they are. The chance to walk openly down the street as an LGBTI person is denied to people all over the world. We should not consider ourselves lucky that we can do it here, but outraged that it cannot happen in other countries.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome.